Inspire Kids with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.
Hi, I'm Adam.
And I'm Sabine. Welcome to the 22nd episode of Robots. Today's episode focuses on engineering education at the elementary school level and how robotics can play a key role in shaping engineers of the future. We first speak with Chris Rogers, professor at Tufts University and developer of RoboLab, a framework for using Lego Mindstorm sets to teach robotics in the classroom.
We then speak with Liz Heron, the manager of the Lego Education Center in Texas, about her hands-on experience with kids and robots. But first, let's hear the latest robotics news of the last 2 weeks with Christine.
Researchers at the National Institute of Advanced Industrial Science in Japan have created the first robot supermodel. The robot was created in an attempt to reduce the size of humanoid technology and fit all required systems into the shape of a small woman. The current prototype, HRP-C4, stands 158 centimeters tall and weighs a mere 43 kilograms. It has 42 degrees of freedom, which allow it to walk with reasonable grace, and it is equipped with voice recognition to answer simple questions. Battery autonomy is 20 minutes. However, while researchers have accomplished an impressive technological feat, the supermodel robot's first steps on the catwalk at the Japan Fashion Show this week were still extremely hesitant. Oddly enough, the robot did not model any clothing. Instead, she showed off her human-like face and hands, as well as a black and silver metallic body. Researchers at the Scuola Superiore Sant'Anna in Pisa, Italy, have designed a biomimetic robotic octopus arm with the goal of building a robot without rigid structure. Octopi are renowned for their ability to reach, grasp, and manipulate objects in tiny spaces with extraordinary dexterity. Using mathematical models and prototypical mock-ups, the researchers have now shown how octopus's tentacles can bend in all directions and quickly thin and elongate to almost twice their length. The researchers are currently working with colleagues in the UK, Switzerland, Turkey, Greece, and Israel to test different artificial muscle technologies that will more accurately mimic tentacles. Researchers at the University of Dallas, US, have created a new type of artificial muscle. The muscles consist of arrays of vertically aligned carbon nanotubes, which push away from each other when a voltage is applied, effectively working the muscle. The new material has strange properties. Among others, it is an aerogel with a density similar to air, but weight for weight, it is stronger than steel and stiffer than diamond. It can elongate 10 times more than natural muscles and at rates 1,000 times higher. And the artificial muscles function in an unusually large temperature range, from below the temperature of liquid nitrogen to above the melting point of iron. For now, the researchers have managed to produce sheets 16 centimeters wide and several meters long. For more information and discussion on this week's news, including videos of the first robot supermodel walking the catwalk, research on the biomimetic robotic octopus arm, as well as the new type of artificial muscle, visit the Robots Forum at www.robotspodcast.com/forum.
Chris Rogers is a professor of mechanical engineering at Tufts University in Massachusetts in the U.S. His research interests are broad, and he's been seen studying fluid dynamics, the flight of insects, and telerobotics, but it's his commitment to the engineering education of children that brought him on our show today. As director of the Center for Engineering Education Outreach, Rogers tours the elementary schools of the world trying to bring engineering and robotics to young children. He has also worked with LEGO to develop RoboLab, a robotic approach to learning science and math. Rogers tells us about the importance of science and engineering in the classroom and how teachers can perhaps help shape the roboticists of tomorrow.
So, hi, Chris. Welcome to the Robots Podcast.
Hi.
Can you introduce yourself to our listeners a little bit?
Sure. I'm a professor of mechanical engineering at Tufts University in Boston, and I teach actually courses in primarily robotics and in fluid mechanics, and have spent the last 10 years working with LEGO on trying to use robotics as a method to get kids excited to learn engineering at all age groups.
So after looking a bit on your website, I see that you do a lot of research in basic physics and in fluid dynamics. And at the same time, you're involved in robotics and children's education. These seem two very kind of not so related fields. Are they complementary or?
Well, my theory always is that if you can't explain it to a kindergartner, then you got to rethink about how you're teaching it. So there's actually a fair amount of overlap, right? In any good science investigation, a big part of the science is figuring out how to communicate the science that you've learned. And so the outreach stuff we do in classrooms is actually a way of communicating both the information that we learn in the labs and on the research side and the excitement of actually doing research.
Speaking of education outreach, can you tell us a little bit about your work educating not just university students as a professor, but younger students?
Sure. So first off, I want to make sure that you guys realize this is not my work, but the work of a whole bunch of people here at Tufts. I just am part of a bigger program.
Mm-hmm.
And really, what I realized when I first went into my son's kindergarten class 12 years ago is that the kids are really excited to learn math and science. They really are excited to understand the world around them. They're very curious. They're still very excited to learn. And basically, over the next 4 or 5 years, we don't build on that excitement. In fact, what we do is we force them to sit still, to memorize, and primarily to learn to read. So what we've been trying to push is to add to that also the idea of logical, pushing them to think logically, to try and understand the world around them, to understand what it means to do a scientific investigation, an engineering design problem, and to really show them why they want to learn math and science by giving them applications.
What kind of applications do you give them? I understand you use robots a lot when trying to explain science to students.
We do. So it ranges all over the place. I guess I should add that we have roughly 40 Tufts undergraduates now that go into classrooms every week through our STOMP program, and STOMP now has seven other sister universities that are doing similar things, plus four other industries, both in the United States and in Switzerland. And so the idea is the more people we can get into these classrooms, the more we can get engineering into the class. So let me give you some examples, because that's what you originally asked for.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the ones, for instance, that they do in the first grade here is they will, of course it's in the winter, they'll ask the kids to try and build a snowplow to push little cotton balls. And so they'll build a robotic snowplow, and it starts to push the cotton balls. But then you get the cotton balls wet, and all of a sudden it can't push the cotton balls anymore. So that's how we bring in the concept of gearing and teach kids how to gear up or gear down so that they now have enough torque to push the cotton balls.
Mm-hmm.
We then take it a step further, and we take their snowplows, and we make them drive their snowplows for a second and see how far it goes, measure how far it goes. And then drive your snowplow for 2 seconds and see how far it goes. And you build up a graph, and now starting in about the second or third grades, you build up a graph that is distance versus time. Then we put the little Lego minifigure exactly 12 centimeters in front of your snowplow, and you have to figure out how long your snowplow should go before just kissing your Lego person. Mm-hmm. So you then program it, and you line them all up, and you hit run, and you see who comes closest. And this gives them the opportunity to understand how to measure. It gives them the opportunity to understand something about velocity and about graphs and about interpolating graphs and also about repeatability and how you have to try things again and again to make sure you got it right. So that's been very successful. In fact, that particular one we use all the way through to the college where we teach control theory in the same sort of fashion. Now you build a proportional controller that will go exactly the 12 centimeters that you asked.
That's really interesting. I know when I was a kid, and we did experiments even all throughout high school and stuff, it was always just pour liquid A into liquid B or drop this mass from 2 meters. We never played with robots or anything like that. Why do you think robots, do you think they add something? Do you think they make studying science more interesting? What are the advantages of using robots to teach children?
So I guess it's not robots as much as it's engineering. So if going back to your mixing chemicals A and B, you obviously were not alone in that. If there's a way that I can tell you I want to understand whatever you're mixing these two chemicals. So say, for instance, you're looking at studies of solubility, which is a typical eighth grade science. And you want to understand solubility. So you actually, I ask you, how much salt can you put in water before it stops dissolving? Rather than give you the canned experiment where you follow a bunch of procedures and don't really know why you're doing anything, I give you a tool set where you can build your own experiment. And so the robotics, because you can use the data logging aspects and the actuator aspects of robotics, suddenly it's pretty exciting because you can make a robot that automatically pours the salt in, mixes it, and measures whether or not you have any precipitate at the bottom. So you can automate your experiments. So that's one thing that the engineering and the robotics gives you. The other thing is it gives you is the ability to answer questions that nobody knows the answer to. So if you remember back to your elementary science school days, most likely most of your labs, the teacher already knew the answer to whatever question you were investigating.
Mm-hmm.
You can look up the solubility of salt. But what if I can give you questions that you don't know, that nobody knows the answer to? So, for instance, one of the ones that Lego played around with a lot was this idea of, well, how many blue jays actually land on your bird feeder in a 24-hour period? So can you design an experiment to measure these things? And all of a sudden now the problem becomes real science as opposed to the labs that you were doing in science, which aren't really real science. Real science, people don't know the answers beforehand. Mm-hmm. They have to be able to look at the results of the measurement and see, does that make sense or not? And these are the skills that I think are very important that we teach to kids, to not just blindly take information off the web or off an experiment, but to actually look at it critically and skeptically and think, does this make sense?
The past few years, there seems to have been a massive increase in robot toys. What do you think about this? For example, we just had an interview with Mark Tilden from Wowie, who he says that robots that he makes as children's toys, they should be taken apart with a screwdriver so that kids can start playing with them. Do you think it's a nice progression to have these robots in the hands of children?
I definitely do. I think that robotics is a pretty exciting topic. Kids get really excited about it. However, I think what I'm more interested, I would agree that giving kids a screwdriver and trying to figure out, reverse engineer something is outstanding. What we spend much more of our time, though, is using robotics as a tool rather than the end-all solution. So instead of it just being a robotics toy, it's actually a tool that lets you into a whole new world of investigative science or math.
You have a very close relationship with Lego Mindstorms and the robotic tools that they have. Can you tell us a little bit about this collaboration and about the products that Lego has to teach children robotics?
Sure. So basically, we've been working with Lego now for, I guess, about 11 years. We started working with them before the Mindstorms products came out. We were talking with them about developing some software for the college level, and they needed a Mac version for the original RCX brick for the education side. And so we used LabVIEW, which is a high-end graphical programming language that we use at the university level, to develop RoboLab, which was a version of LabVIEW essentially for kids that didn't require a lot of knowledge of programming to use. RoboLab did quite well, much better than any of us ever suspected. And what it did well was two things. One, it because it was purely graphical, it allowed kids at a very early age to program it. So we even had kids as young as three programming their own robots because you didn't have to read to be able to use it. Because it's graphical, also we found that teachers had a much easier time trying to debug problems that students were having because they could look over the shoulder of the student and quickly find possible errors. There are a number of issues with it, too. Anytime you have software that lasts for 10 years, you start to run into all sorts of problems. And so recently, LEGO has combined forces with National Instruments, the people that actually produce LabVIEW, to develop the new software for the NXT, which is a new Mindstorms product. And we're now working with them on trying to further the abilities so that you get younger kids actually doing some pretty complicated stuff on the robots.
Can you tell us about this new NXT platform?
It's not that new. It's been out for almost 2 years now. It's similar to the RCX, except for the fact that it's got a bigger, faster, better processor, two-dimensional screen, so you can do graphs on the screen and stuff like that. It's got Bluetooth and a bunch more sensors. There's about 50 different sensors that we support on the NXT, which means that there's a lot more science experiments that you can run.
Okay.
I should mention also, going back to your question with LEGO, we've been spending the last couple years working a lot with LEGO on trying to develop ways to develop communities of teachers. So one of the things that's very important to us is that we get engineering into every classroom at every age group, so that there are second graders, fifth graders, 11th graders all solving engineering problems. And to do that, what you really need to do is go from what we have currently, which is every school or a couple of schools has one or two maverick teachers that have sort of stepped out from the norm and have brought either robotics, or we also do work with stop action movies or one of these other techniques to bring engineering into their classroom. And so by developing these communities of these maverick teachers, we're hoping that we can eventually get them to change their whole local school systems. And so we have a program called LEGO Engineering. So legoengineering.com is the website for it, and then there's a whole conference series, LEGO Engineering conferences, that happen all around the world. So we just had one in Saudi Arabia, for instance, where these teachers come together and share stories and work with teachers that haven't tried the different tools before. And again, and LEGO is only one of the possible ways of bringing engineering into the classroom. We really don't care which way it gets brought in. We just want to see it happen. And as you know, robotics is pretty exciting to kids, so we find that an effective way.
Well, that leads exactly to the next question I was going to ask, actually. Say there's a teacher who's listening to our podcast right now. What would be your suggestion for that teacher to try to bring engineering to the classroom? Is it enough to just go out there and buy a set of Lego, or is there some websites you would suggest? How should they get into it?
So the first thing I would do is raise awareness that there are a number of issues of bringing engineering to the classroom. So if you bring, and again, it doesn't matter if it's Lego or not, but if you bring some engineering problem into your classroom, you'll find your classroom will change substantially. So the issues that we've seen is, first, teachers get uncomfortable because the class goes from being a nice, quiet, well-structured class to what I call teaching through chaos. Kids are up, they're moving around, they're excited, they're running up to you with questions, either mathematical questions, science questions, or just simple design questions. Things go wrong, batteries die, computers crash. And one of the things you'll find in engineering is really one of the strengths of engineering is failure is often one of the strongest learning tools out there. And so as they continue to fail and overcome their failures, they're actually learning very effectively. So first off is the classroom dynamic changes. The teacher goes from being an instructor to more of a mentor or a coach. Second, there is a lot of teachers struggle with this issue of there is no right answer. So if a kid comes up to you and asks a question, no longer can you say, yeah, no, I'm sorry, 5.7 is not the right answer. You didn't do your subtraction right over here. Instead, it's, I don't know if this is a better way to build the gizmo or not. And all of a sudden, you're no longer the source of all information. You can only help them with your limited knowledge of what they're trying to do. what that does is actually empowers the kid to be much more directing his or her own learning, which we have seen in the long run actually is quite a powerful educational tool. Mm-hmm. You also have not a whole lot of teachers that have backgrounds in engineering, so a number of teachers don't know the content and sometimes are actually scared of the content. You'll hear teachers say, I'm not a science person, I'm not an engineering person. So how do you... So getting over those fears often takes a little bit of work. But with all those things in mind, what we see over and over again in many, many different countries and many, many different classrooms is kids coming alive and directing their own learning. And oftentimes it's kids that aren't doing well in the current system. So we'll hear stories about how Johnny, who was always disrupting the class, now is the star of the class because there's something that he's proud of that he can do. ADD kids are... a lot of times we'll really take off with this because it's so physical and so active as opposed to having to sit still. What most of the research out in education shows really, which makes complete sense, is that none of us actually learn exactly the same way. And since most classrooms, teachers tend to teach the way they were taught, that method works great for students that learn the same way that particular teacher does, but doesn't necessarily work well for some of the other students in our classroom. And so how can we restructure our classrooms at the college level or at the first grade level so that learners of all types can learn in the styles that in which they work well? And so the solution to that really is to try and teach the same problem from multiple ways. The other problem that teachers will run into is that it takes longer. And so how can I get through all the stuff I'm supposed to get through in the year if I'm going to spend so much time with these kids constructing these things? And it's a very good question, and one of the things that we work on is trying to, instead of add something to the teacher's plate, actually replace something on the teacher's plate. So instead of teaching math by multiple worksheets, maybe do just a couple worksheets and spend the other time doing an engineering project that requires that same math knowledge in order to complete it. Again, getting these multiple representations in the classroom. So now to go back to answer your question... If you are a teacher and you are excited to try some of this stuff, there are a number of things I would suggest doing. The first is to simply just give an engineering problem to a kid. It can be absolutely anything. From one of the ones I do initially that's a lot of fun is every kid grabs a handful of Lego bricks, and they have 3 minutes to put those Lego bricks together in some way so that when you drop them from your hip, they will not break. Mm-hmm. And so this is the whole idea of teaching kids how to identify a goal, a solution, how to plot a path to that solution. And then when they test it and find out that it breaks, how do you change your path? How do you redesign your product? And then you can have them work in teams to do it, and then you can have them work in teams but can't talk, so you can teach the role of communication in all of this. And so you continually build. If that all starts to work successfully, then the next thing I suggest is to reach out into your community and find some engineers that will help you run some engineering problems in your class, because multiple sets of hands makes it a lot easier. And so either you can use high school kids or kids from the grade ahead. We've done stuff where you have reading buddies where, you know, fourth graders will read with second graders, and then you can make them science buddies as well so that they're doing some of these science and engineering problems together. There are a number of parents that are interested and excited to help out in the education of their kids but don't necessarily know how to. And so as a teacher, if you ask them specifically to come in and be maybe the person that answers all engineering questions, that frees up your time as the teacher to go around and actually ask kids questions. Because in this new learning environment, the way that they really learn is through discussion and through by you asking, why did you do that? What made you pick that size tire or those pieces? And then group discussions, bringing the class together and looking at maybe Kimberly's snowplow versus John's snowplow, and why did Kimberly's snowplow push more wet cotton balls than did John's.
Mm-hmm. So maybe as a last question, what do you see as kind of a final goal? Where do you hope this education outreach program to be in maybe 10 years from now? Do you hope every student eventually applies to an engineering program, or what would you hope, or to see maybe Lego in every single classroom? Do you have like a goal of that type?
So my long-term vision/hope is that everybody that graduates from high school will have some rudimentary understanding of engineering, math, and science, so that when we hit issues like global warming and sustainability, of energy sustainability, and all of these, that when people are voting on policies, that they actually understand the science behind what's going on and some of the engineering constraints that affect this particular problem. So there's going to be a number of them in the next 10 years that can make a huge difference for our children and our grandchildren. And if our voters don't understand the science behind it, then the policies that they choose might not be the most advantageous ones. So that's sort of the very high-end vision is just to raise the general public knowledge in this field, or literacy in this field. The individual one is actually, I would love to see not just Lego in every classroom, but to see a number of competitors with a number of different products where kids can rapidly prototype different engineering ideas and concepts. And in particular, ones where there's a big physical world, so that they're not just doing CAD on a computer and sitting behind the screen and moving a mouse, but they're actually up and active and working together to design solutions to various problems.
Well, let's hope we see this in the next few years and that all of our kids get to play with lots of robots as the days go by.
I agree.
Thank you very much, Chris. It was a pleasure having you on the show.
My pleasure.
Liz Heron is the manager of the Lego Education Center in Southlake, Texas, which welcomes kids as young as 3 for after-school activities involving Lego. Kids 8 and up are introduced to the world of robotics with the Lego Mindstorms and are encouraged to work in groups to figure out how their robots can explore an area, manipulate objects, avoid obstacles, and locomote. She'll be telling us about her hands-on experience during the classes and the amazing solutions these kids can whip up.
Hi, Liz. Welcome to Robots.
Hello.
So, you work at the Lego Education Center. Can you first present yourself to our listeners?
Sure. My name's Liz, and I work at the Lego Education Center in Southlake, Texas, in the United States of America, and I'm the manager here.
Excellent. Can you explain what the goal of the Lego Education Center is?
Yes. The goal of the Education Center is to provide some additional classes and workshops and experiences, particularly in math, science, and technology, to the students ages 3 through 12 in our area.
So what type of Lego robots do you use for your classes?
We use the NXT robots here at the center.
So these robots, do you use them for all these ages you just spoke of, or is it only for a certain age range?
Well, we use the NXT specifically. You have to be at least 8 years old to use them. And we have 4 different levels of classes that we use the robots with. And our beginner classes, we have what's called the Dr. Heartbeat class. And the children really love those. It's a simulation of the circulatory system. And we tell the children that the bots are nanobots, and we have a whole story that goes behind them, and the children learn how to program the robots, and they go through a circulatory system, and they get to remove cells, and they get they have different grabbers and different pieces they put on the nanobots, and there's kind of this crazy Dr. Heartbeat behind the whole story, and the children just love it. The parents love it. They have a lot of fun with it. And then our intermediate level is Snuffy the police dog. And Snuffy gets programmed by the students to do a lot of community work, like going to the fire station and the police station. And he gets programmed to avoid obstacles and to help out people in the community. And they love that one as well, of course. And then our most favorite level is the, it's called the Robo Family. And that particular bot, the children build. And he looks like an archaeologist. He has a big hat that he wears, kind of like Indiana Jones. And he has a mat that looks a little bit like a desert. And he's able to do all sorts of creative things. And he's a lot of fun.
And so typically the kids, do they go there after class? Do they go, I mean, when do they go to the center?
We have class offerings. The children here get out of school around 3 o'clock, and we're open until 7. So the children are able to come to our center after school hours during the week, and then we also offer classes on Saturdays. So that's when most of our children come to see us. We do have some children that see us during the school days because we have some children who are homeschooled. They don't attend regular school. They're schooled by their parents. So we do have some of those, but most of our children see us after regular school hours or on Saturdays.
And what do you think robotics brings to the picture? How does it help kids learn science or math?
Well, I believe that it's really giving them a leg up. There's so much more that goes into what they're doing with the curriculum than just having fun with the robotics. There's early engineering that's taking place. There's problem solving that's taking place. I see children that come into the center who are highly gifted and are able to work very well by themselves in a regular school setting. They come into the center, and there are certain pieces of the curriculum where we require that they not only work independently at times, but they have to work with other students. And it's very important, you know, as you know, that we all have the ability not only to work independently, but to work on a team. So we help children to develop those social skills as well. We help them to develop their problem-solving skills using math concepts, using science concepts. So they're not only using, you know, the technology piece with the robot, that they're having to apply what they know about math and science at a very high level, and they're having to think very critically, and they're having to work on it as a team. So I'm seeing children really develop a lot of skills that they're not able to work on in a regular class setting.
And what are typical problems kids have when you give them these Lego robots and a problem to solve?
They'll have to program it to do something like go get a cell. You know, we'll say, you know, put your robot at its beginning stage, and we will tell them how to do some basic maneuvers, like moving it forward or backwards or doing a right turn or a left turn. But they will have to figure out, you know, how many degrees does the robot have to turn to get to a certain point on the mat, or, you know, what are they going to have to do to get to, say, with Snappy the police dog, how is he going to get to the police station? What I tell parents at the center is we tell them the what, but we do not tell them the how. And that's what the children have to figure out. They take the knowledge that they have, and then they have to really problem solve and apply it at a very high level, think very critically, and create a new way of applying that knowledge to get where they need to go.
Robotics is a rather new technology, and I find it amazing how kids can just adapt to this new technology. Do you think they could be even better than the parents?
Oh, it is very amazing. What I find amazing is when I train children to use the robotics, they do it at a rate so much faster than the adults. I can train a child to do something in about an hour that will take me 4 hours to train an adult.
Do you have maybe one example of a great solution that these kids were able to find?
Well, I had a student that built his own robot, and he had actually built the robot too tall, and he was having trouble with it because there are 4 ports on the NXT, and he had all 4 of the ports moving in at the same rate, but because of the height of the robot, it was kind of falling over. And so he kept adjusting the rate of each of the ports so that he could, he didn't want to shorten the height of the robot, which would have been an easy fix. I think that's what 90% of the individuals would have done. But he really did not want to change the look of his robot. He did not want to shorten the height of his robot. He wanted it to work. So he kept messing around with and just scientifically going through with trial and error and documenting on a graph what his speeds in each of those ports were, and he was able, through controlling the speed of the wheels on his robot, he was able to maintain the integrity of his robot by controlling the speed of his wheels through those different ports. And I was fascinated because it never would have occurred to me to do that.
It's pretty
and
impressive.
He was able to figure that out on his own and was able to problem solve that. And it was just, it blew me away.
Maybe with respect to genders, do you have more girls or boys who are interested in this? Is there a difference? And are you maybe trying to promote this to girls?
Well, we had, that's an interesting question, and I'm glad you asked it. We had originally, we had more boys. But we have been doing some badge, the Girl Scouts of America had several troops come in and earn their technology badge. So through that exposure, we have had many, many girls sign up for our robotics classes. And I have one robotics class that is all women now. So the girls are definitely catching up. I think it's just a matter of getting exposure out there, letting the girls know that we're here, and getting them interested. Once they see it and experience it, they love it. So, you know, at this time, I would say it's probably about a 60-40 split. But the girls are definitely getting interested and definitely getting in here and taking the classes.
Maybe a final question on the future. Where do you see the LEGO Education Center maybe in 5-10 years?
I think that we will be bigger and stronger. I think that we will continue to grow. I think that you will be seeing more centers all around the world, definitely. I think that you'll see adult classes going on, and I think that you will see, I think that you'll see an increase not only in the LEGO Education Center, but I think you're going to see an increase in this type of center. I think we're going to have some competition in the future just because it's such a great idea. Their children need opportunities above and beyond what is being provided in public education. And, you know, I think that we're going to be seeing more and more of this type of opportunity out there for children to expand their knowledge, particularly in the math, science, and technology field.
Thanks, Liz, for being here with us on Robots.
Thank you so much.
And that's it for this episode of Robots. For more information on our guests, visit our website at www.robotspodcast.com. Our next show will air in 2 weeks. In the meantime, don't forget to stay in touch through our forum for the latest news and hot topics in robotics.
Thanks for listening. Hope to see you in 2 weeks.
Inspire Kids with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.